up in the beginning here. Please start. Please start.
I'm wearing this because we're trying to do a recording session at once. So hopefully it will work. Never done anything this room before. The point where you are now in writing your plan for the master thesis should be somewhere near where you should have an ideal world, of course. You have thought about your project well in detail, coming up with a very nice problem description and a plan for what to do. You've done some literature, some search for literature, and are basing your project on that. And now is the time then to think about what can go wrong. Well, that's the general plan for today. I'll talk a little bit about things to consider in this type of risk assessment in a project today. And we'll talk a little bit about ethics. I'm not going to spend 2 hours on this. Probably just an hour or something. And after that, today, there will also be class-wise meeting. So I actually haven't got the room for that. I expect that the interactive function should be made here. But take a look in the, you should find it in the schedule or the email somewhere. So, any project we do have limitations or have risks to it. And they may be more or less, the strategies we have chosen to apply may be more or less appropriate or feasible for the problem that we are investigating. And I've tried to put these weaknesses and things to think about into different categories, like things that have to do with design and methodology, things that have to do with yourself and with the resources that surround you. So that when it comes to design and methodology, you probably have, well, you have different types of projects. Some of you have projects that involve people, some have projects that only have to do with algorithms, I guess. Some of you are doing purely theoretical work. Many of you will, no matter what type of project you do, have some need of people around you or equipment around you, stuff like that. Some means to actually do your research. And that, out of experience, some of these things have shown to be quite important to think about. Have you thought about the type of, let's say you're going to do some kind of a study that involves taking some measurements of some human function, like, well, I had a student here a couple of years ago who went to investigate body or muscular pain. came and he wanted to apply a measurement of pain and strain in muscles. And he took for granted that it was just to find some instrument to measure it, which of course isn't true. It needs a lot of skills in order to operate it. It needs a lot of skills in order to get data out from something like that. It requires a lot of skills to actually negotiate how to get that type of equipment from medical facility somewhere. So the important thing here is that you should think about some of these things before you actually do your study. I'm not sure if anyone are in a position where they require specific equipment, but some of you may be. And that is definitely a risk in any project that you do. We'll end up with some kind of a checklist in the end here, by the way, so I won't follow this all these slides in detail. Other tools, I'm talking about statistical analysis and tools for that. That's also something you should consider. Is it, do you have the necessary software and skills to operate that software? These are all things that you that may be quite critical in order to actually end up with a good project. Are you at an appropriate level when it comes to theoretical and maybe even practical skills to do the research that you propose to do? Are you the right person to do it? Well, in an optimistic sense, we're all capable of doing whatever is needed, but in more practical terms, we have our interests, we know some of our limitations. If you are going to use, just to take an example from my field, if you're going to use, for instance, an eye tracker to do experimentation, well, it's pretty simple to, anyone can get data in and out of that eye tracker. But if your aim is to actually find some new, let's say new measurement of something in the end, where you actually need to use some, well, let's say you need to use a tool like MATLAB or something in order to actually turn the data and develop what you need to do in the end. Well, if that's the case, should you do it? If you don't have the skills to actually use MATLAB, for instance. Just an example. It can go the other way around as well. If you're going to do a project where you need to find people where you can get in a position where you can hear quite bad stories by individuals, and you're not a very good listener and not a person that's very good at showing empathy, should you do it? Well, maybe you should do it, but at least these are things you should consider. And you should consider this during your planning phase, because now is the time where you can redirect your project a little bit so that it fits actually your skills in a better way than it originally did. So, don't necessarily aim for the... you should aim for an advanced project, that's not what I mean to say. But aim for something that you are comfortable doing as well, and that you feel you have the skills to do. A
another thing that has to do with you as an investigator has to do with your general, say, time constraints. Even though the project may show to be a project that seems to be possible to do within the half year frame that, or actually a few months that you're going to do the project. Even though the project should be able to, if you plan things very detailed, it could be done, but are you in a position where you actually can devote that much extra time? Can you devote 20 hours each day for this? Maybe that's also something you should consider when you are planning your project. Step a little back, look at your own resources, look at the demands you are facing for the people around you. Are you in a family situation? Do you have a little job as well that you need to take care of? Plan according to that. Maybe the project won't be that ideal and perfect. And maybe you need to make some shortcuts, but maybe you need to shave off the project a little bit. Well, that's fair. But do it now when you plan for it. Don't shave it off in the end of May or something, where you find that you don't have time available and skills to do the project. So it's a good idea to do it now before you start. And then it's easier to make the process grow than to make it shrink in that way. You put too much demand on the environment where you're going to do your research. You have access to, well, we talked a little bit about equipment, of course, in the beginning, but it can also be other things. It can be supervisors' time, supervisors' skills, competence. You have access to the right people there. And are they available? Do they have enough time? At least you should think about it. Consider whether this is good. Some resources are also a little bit limited. Computer time or the use of special lab equipment may have limits to it, whether you can actually get access to it as much as you would like. You have the information security people have labs here. Some of you are probably going to use very specialized equipment in your studies. Equipment that probably or that may be used by maybe a PhD student, maybe it's used in teaching somewhere. In that case, that also, well, if you should consider it, you should think about it. What do I need? What type of equipment do I need? And will I get access to it in the time frame where I actually need it? In my case, I have a few students who's going to use eye trackers, for instance, and that is somewhat negotiations that needs to be done. It's several people are using it. It's used in other projects. It's used outside the campus. So you need to make sure that you are in the loop and actually will get this equipment when you need it. Some of you may also be dependent on others. For instance,
of my students will need assistance from people outside our department, maybe, when it comes to doing some advanced math, if necessary. In that case, you need to have maybe some external or additional supervisors and helpers that you need to negotiate with time-wise. So it's probably a good idea to make this kind of list. Who do I need access to? When do I need access to them? And when do I need access to what equipment? And how critical is it for me to actually get that access? Okay, these are just some of the points. In the course that you had for scientific methodology last year, you will find a number of different checklists for issues like this, and one of the things you will find there is this type of a checklist that has to do with risks and the appropriateness and feasibility of your actual project. So there is a number of points there that you could follow to see if you are on track. If there are things you have forgotten to think about. I have listed some of them up here, so I'll probably, don't know where to put it, but talk with Hilda and we'll find a place so that you get access to these the slides I'm using here now. Is there a front page for this course? Okay. Okay, yeah, I'll put it there. Probably a resource folder there. maybe I haven't talked about the first point in this checklist here. When you are stating a research problem, an area that you're going to investigate, are you actually is there a good link between the problem that you're going to solve, the big issue, the big idea that you want to do something with? Is there a good link between that and the type of data and the type of project that you're actually conducting? So how appropriate is your project to answer the main question that you're dealing with? Well, this initial description of research projects tends to be overly ambitious. You're going to solve really huge problems, while the actual project that you do may only focus on a very narrow part of the big problem that you're addressing. So the important thing here is this is more or less a checkpoint to ensure that there is a link between these two. Well, in case there isn't, in case you're only going to make an algorithm for a small problem that has to do with the big problem of identity control or something like that. If you're only going to make a tiny little algorithm, that's only part of the problem. If you're only going to investigate the, let's say, basic methodologies that needs to be in place in order to solve the big problem, these are realities. These are the normal size of this, of the project that you actually can do in the month you have for a master thesis. You shouldn't then change the overall description of the problem that you're trying to investigate.
type of solution. I'm not going to look at the business potential of this idea. I'm only going to look at the basic data that's needed in order to make a survey like this or a service like this. Well, make sure that in your report there is somewhat a chapter or only some paragraphs that's dealing with this. What am I not going to investigate? Where are the boundaries of my research problem compared to the whole area that I'm going to investigate? That's something that the reviewers or examiners that's going to read your project plans is going to be looking for. You have a realistic idea of your contribution to the world with your project. It also helps you in order to actually be more satisfied with what you achieve in the end. Well, I didn't solve the big problem, but actually I did solve the small problem that I was aiming to solve, and that is a necessary step in the big picture. Another thing you need to, I covered some of this, but what I didn't talk about is whether you actually have access to the type of raw material or data that you need in order to do your project. If you're going to do something that helps people with dyslexia or with some medical problem, having a better life, well, if you want to actually perform user tests that involve people with these conditions, you have access to them. You know them, you know organizations who can give you access to it. If you're going to work with information security issues, so that has to do with data intrusion, stuff like that, you actually have good data that allows you to do the analysis that you're going to do. Is it up to you to make sure that this happens? Can you yourself make sure that you get the data you need? Or you need some kind cooperation from another organization, people that knows the people you need to get in contact with. You need contact with a company in order to get data that's relevant for the task you're going to solve. So, and this may be critical. Because if you are depending on others, well, if they don't do the job, if they can't do it, don't have the resources to do it, are unreliable, I don't know what, that will also be critical to your project. And if you haven't plan for that. If you haven't got a plan B before you start the project, you will just be sitting there waiting for something that may not happen. So think about these dependencies before you start the project, and check that you actually have access. It may not be needed for you, but in some cases you are also planning for to do an experiment based on something that should happen out in the society somewhere.
It may be the case for people working with information security, for instance. Maybe you need a fraud case or something like that in order to investigate strategies to make people more aware of their behaviors. Will that happen? So have plan Bs available for you. Think about what may go wrong. Now, how do we solve these? These are just a number of things that, based on experience, may go wrong in projects. How do you treat them in your project plan when you're going to write this down? Well, there are different strategies. Some will try to make this type of risk assessment in format of some kind of a table. Don't look at the content here. The point is that when you think about something that may go wrong, well, let's say I can't get hold of the eye tracker, or the eye tracker breaks down or something like that. That's definitely a that may happen. It's technology, and if it's one of a kind, well, that would also be kind of critical if you have checked that repairing this takes, well, a month to, if it needs to be sent to Germany and get back here or something like that. If you have identified something like that, well, write it down and try also to say something about the probability that this may happen. Is it something that's highly likely to occur? Is it unlikely? So you can find your own vocabulary, your own words. A good strategy is to put things down in a 5-point scale or something, from highly unlikely to highly likely. That the risk you had identified can occur. But you should then also say something about the severity of things if it happens. So if this happens, what will the consequences be? In the case with this eye tracker, well, if it breaks down, if there are some technical problems, well, it will, of course, be kind of critical. But you can also plan for a way to solve it. Maybe you know that we have a couple of other technologies available as well that you may want to use instead of the original one. And then you have a way around it so that the severity of the thing that happens will become much smaller. So try to rate something in probability and severity, and also plan for ways around it. Are there ways for me to handle this? And there will always be a number of these things. So take the try to make something like this in your report. It can be in form of text, of course. It can be in form of a table like this. There are other ways of doing it as well. I have seen variations where people make all kinds of sophisticated tables where you state a number of things in a table outside and map them to some kind of a severity map, where you, of course, don't want a lot of things to be up here. Significant, important, and almost certain to happen. So if you have things there, at least you should have strategies to avoid it. But maybe you should even rephrase your whole research project. If you have things more that's more, you say, rare and unlikely to happen, and only moderately dramatic, because there are easy ways around it, well, that's probably okay. But at least then you have identified and thought about ways around it. It could also be in form of a more, it didn't come up very well, but this type of as well as SWOT analysis. It's more used in organizational settings if you're going to do a project together with others. It may be a good thing to do, where you judge the project strengths and weaknesses, the opportunities and threats linked to it. Just to analyze all the potential dangers, but also the maybe the benefits that makes it worthwhile having a few threats there. So there are many ways of doing this. The most common one is to make some sort of a table where you have probabilities, consequences, or severity, and where you have, in the end, maybe not risk level, but strategies, ways around it. In the end. So this is the format that at least I'm most comfortable with. Okay. That was a little bit about risk assessment in project planning. The next topic that we'll touch a little on, I won't go through all the slides I have here, but I'll point out some resources to you. This has to do with research ethics. Few projects are above ethical considerations. Even if you do things with algorithms, it may have ethical concerns, because it has to do with you as a researcher. It has to do with you as part of a society. So there are always a number of ethical considerations to make in when you plan a research project. Research ethics is, as you may have heard before, not that much, could say, strict rules, absolute rules, as it is guidelines or things to consider, things to think about when you're going to do research. It has to do with how you treat the participants, if you have people involved in your study. All the things that has to do with privacy, confidentiality, and of course the ruling idea of informed consent, that everybody should be informed of what they're taking part in and be competent actually to take this choice. So this is one area, but it also has to do with more professional issues, falsification of data, faking data. But maybe more important or more commonly occurring things that has to do with how you actually report things that doesn't completely go in line with your expectations.
things that has to do with you as a researcher in an organization, maybe where you are part of the same organization yourself. Maybe you are working in a company and are getting support for your research project from that company. Where maybe it's the company will look negative at you if you come up with negative answers to their brilliant new concept or brilliant new product. If it actually comes out quite bad, should you report it? Should you say something about it? Or should you just ignore the results? Well, it is a pretty common thing to do, but it's considered a pretty serious thing to do as well. So the solution here is, of course, always to report your affiliations. Report who is funding. Is there a potential risk of or a conflict between your role as a person and your role as a researcher here? Are you working within this organization? Are you part of an interest group that works with this problem? It may be important, at least you should say that this is the case, if it's the case. And in some cases also, there's also some stuff on the relationship between research and society that should be considered. Research doesn't happen in a vacuum, and it's not disconnected from the rest of the society. What you say, the conclusions you make, may have consequences for how others out in the society will behave. In the short run, in the longer run, maybe it will affect how. If you did medical research, maybe it will change how different problems are treated. And if there are uncertainties in your research, well, be sure to communicate that there actually are uncertainties, that you're not that 100% safe, that the conclusions you come up with is are the correct ones. I have some slides here, but I think actually I'm going to jump directly to this type of checklist here. A very good place to start when it comes to research ethics is to make sure that you are aware of the guidelines for good ethical sound research within your field, within the area that you're actually going to do research. And we have a number of really good sources for this. Internationally, but also here in Norway, we have these research ethic committees for different areas. Point them out here. Committees. They have ethical guidelines for different areas. Maybe you can see it here. There's something that is in the solution here. So there are some general guidelines that could go for all. There are medical guidelines. This is probably one that's relevant for a lot of you. That is for men. The National Committees for Research Ethics on Science and Technology. They have made a nice document, but also a very short checklist and guidelines, which you can go through. there is one here that may be nice to look at if you're going to gather data over the internet or do research on things done on the net. So there is a separate set of guidelines for how to perform research on the internet. It gives you a document like this with a very nice overview for things to check and things to read. It's very easily available. It's not a very long document, and it has short verses that well worth looking at and going through before you actually do your research. So what will happen when I go back to the when it comes to privacy whether you actually should do your research, well, some projects that involve data from humans also requires a registration process. And this goes especially if you're combining data from a database that where you're going to link data in some way, where you are going to gather some kind of personal or sensitive data about people. Well, you may have to register your project in our case, something called Personvernombudet for forskning. In English, the data protection official for research is handled by NSD. And they have a number of, for instance, checklists. So do I need to actually register my project? You go through 5, 6, 7 questions there just to check if you need to register it. It's not a very huge thing to register a project either. It's pretty basic. It takes only days. It says 30 days here. But my experience is that they tend, at least if it's not very complicated, they tend to give you feedback within a few days. And I've never been in a situation where the project that they have proposed have been rejected. But it's important to do this. It's important that you discuss these things with your supervisor. But it's an easy process to do, so don't worry. In some cases, this registration process, and if you are, this goes especially if you are doing not necessarily medical research, but where you are gathering data that has to do with different types of diagnosis, medical conditions, psychology. Or you may be advised to register it even one step further and go to what's called the regional research ethics committees. But I doubt that any of you will be in a situation where that will happen. But that's more of a cumbersome process and it takes time. It will probably be kind of late to do it now if you're going to do research in the spring. So that's part already, I think. But in most cases, you don't need to do that. So it's usually enough to register, yes? That with your supervisor. I guess I haven't been in a situation where that has been the case. You will get you have these advices when it comes to privacy that you should have the list of participants separate from the actual data, for instance, so you can't connect them. And that list should be physically somewhere else, and it should be locked down. So there are some of these things to consider. Yes, I'm sure the school can handle that. I'm sure we have facilities to handle that if you are in such a situation. But discuss it with your supervisor. So these are usually things that you may see in your in a ethics checklist. So have you gone through the necessary steps in the registration process? Have you checked for this? The next thing you should think about, not necessarily in this list of course, in this order, are there any risks, threats to participants in your study? If so, a little flag should rise, and are there ways around it? When it comes to risks and hazards, well, these can be of different kinds. Well, they may be physical, but they may also be of a more psychological nature. Do you actually include? Well, so some people may be offended by the material that you're going to show them. If you're going to investigate net porn or something like that, well, maybe you will have to show pages or something like that. Maybe you'll have to show pictures, material. That may be offensive to some. That may not be offensive to others. But these are things you should consider, and you should handle it. Maybe it's okay to do this study anyway, but at least then you should have strategies for how to cope with it. So, and this gives you the whole idea about these research ethics guidelines. It's not so that these are stop signs. It's more like the advice signs. Think about it. Are you putting any other strains on people that's part of your study? For instance, do they need? Will it steal a lot of time from them? If they have this time available and if you have informed consent, well, maybe it's okay. But if you require them to use a lot of time with you, maybe it's a good idea to try to get some kind of compensation to them, give them something for taking part in your study. They're not obliged to do it. You should also, of course, think about whether the benefits of your study, is it worth it? Are the benefits larger than the costs for individuals, for yourself, for the institution, for society as such? These are things you should think about. And of course, privacy, etc. These things are goes without too much saying. Finally, the point that I somehow started with here, and which is the most common ethical mistake done in studies that you are involved in, and that is the failure to report your own biases, your own affiliations, who is funding your research. Are you doing research in a company where you have a vague or maybe even a good chance of getting a paid job later? In that case, the reader of the research paper should know it. little bit of a warning flag for the reader. And it makes it more important for you to be open on these things. We have become more and more aware of these issues, and we are trying now to make everybody that may have some kind of an affiliation with the topic or the research subject, for instance, or an organization, to be open with it and state it in the beginning of their thesis. Okay, that was what I was planning of talking about today, but Hilde came in quietly here, and I think she has some practical information, and she can also, there tends to be a lot of these practical questions now. She can also answer some of the practical questions. This was the part I plan to do in a common session here now. But before I give you the room here, Hilda, we'll meet afterwards. I think it's said in the calendar that we meet at 12:15. I think that's when it's scheduled, so we'll wait till that. But for the information or for the interaction design students, I would like you to, when we come together, plan for a couple of minutes where you explain and justify your project for the others, and try to think about some of the risks. What can possibly go wrong in my project? And that's what we're going to discuss. Okay, Hilda.
First of all, I have a very small question to some of you. Did you ever receive something from Studio Barometer? Some of you did. Okay. So if you have received, all of you from the which are defined as second year master students should have received. And if you have, please answer. We need more answers. So hope you already did. Then we, then it is a question about the research project planning. Do you have any questions, more of the practical, the kind of practical questions regarding the research project planning on this semester? Everything fine? Almost? You have a deadline, and you are aware of the deadline. There exists a hand-in folder in front of, I hope. We forgot to check that, so we have this first hand-in in October, but it should be there. So that's fine. Some of you were waiting for feedback from this hand-in in October. We don't usually do any feedback. We just click on accept it, because it's in a way just to register. You have started, you have a supervisor, you have kind of an idea about what your topic will be. And then you just continue together with your supervisor. That's what it is. And I think you now have checked all these hand-in folders from October, and I think there is a click on accepted on all of you. So, but everything is fine. You just continue. when it comes to the deadline in December, there is a project planning. It's one of those courses which you can do in spring semester if you want to. So for some of you, you are in this part-time or almost situation, for some reason are delayed or are combining with jobs, and it's just too much to finish it all in one semester, you have the option to register